Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Ashton.
Where is he?
He's got the blocks.
He's flipping blocked himself, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's all my fault.
Yeah?
Because I made us record the day early, and then he got sick.
Right,
the
but there's early. A chance that he also
might have been
not...
sick normally.
Yeah,
on the normal,
on the
day
normal
as well.
Recording day. But Peter Austin does have the plops.
He does
we
have
hope
the plops.
He feels better soon.
Yes.
This is actual plops, not holiday plops. No. You, however, are about to get holiday plops because it's Wednesday at the time of recording.
Yeah.
And you're on a half day, and then you're going to catch a flight.
I'm going to catch a flight. Yeah. And I'm stressed. And my tummy hurts.
We were just talking about this. Your tummy hurts because you've got. You just feel like you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders.
Yeah, I just have anxiety and that makes my tummy hurt more.
Right.
And okay. I also had a chicken burger for tea last night.
Well, see,
which
know,
is probably what's mainly making my tummy hurt.
That could make your tummy hurt, but there's also the butterflies that's not caused by chicken burgers.
It's like the excitement and the anxiety. That it's basically just one too many emotion for my bowels to handle.
Right.
That's, you know, what's going on.
It's a tough time.
They're so irritated all the time.
I can't wait to hear the stories from when you get back from your all-inclusive holiday and just what your body has rejected because it's going to be a lot.
I know
isn't it?
It's going to be so much. I'm going to be like, and then I had a slice of toast the next morning, and I
was violently.
I almost pooed in the pool. That's what's going to be. But
how many days did Ashton spend inside?
Yeah, exactly. How many times did I have to rush from the pool to the bedroom to use the toilet? It will be a lot.
I can't wait. Are you going to be? You're going to be back in time for next week's podcast.
Yes, I will get back at 2 a.m. next Thursday morning.
Really?
Be here for 9.
Oh my God.
And I'm going to record a podcast on what will probably be about 6 hours sleep.
You're going to be on top form.
Yeah, baby.
And you're also going to be recording an After Dark that day as well.
Yeah.
So that's going to be particularly unhinged.
It's going to be good.
So make sure you support us on Patreon, which I'll talk about in a minute. Each and every week, we are sponsored by a very real video game adjacent sponsor. Helps us keep the lights on here. I've remembered this time. Do we see Dead Island 2, the spider, or is he still next door?
He's still in my toilet, I think. He was briefly joined by about three others, and now I think there's just the one in there again.
Okay.
So he's still in there, I think.
It's just some fluff on the floor there. I thought that might be spindly legs. Mm. I've got the ad read this week.
Oh, yes.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Prepare yourselves.
I'm ready.
To celebrate the release of Exo Primal, which is out now, I believe, the beloved BBC documentary is making a comeback, presented by Kenneth Branachiosaurus.
Ooh.
And return... Yeah, I'll do it again. Presented by Kenneth Branachiosaurus.
Yeah.
And returning to screens on Saturday night at 5:30 p.m., it's Walking with AI-nosaurs.
Wow. Mm. Wow.
You want to think about it? It's a thinker.
There is a thinker. I've never...
with AI-nosaurs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the dinosaurs in Exo Primal
are robots.
Yeah. Yeah, some of them.
Most of them, right?
I think. I don't know.
Are they?
The AI is dropping them into the situation.
Right.
So technically they are AI dinosaurs.
AI-nosaurs.
AI-nosaurs.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Were you about to say you've never seen Walking with Dinosaurs?
Yes.
It did air in the late 90s.
Yeah, and I was born in the late 90s.
Yeah,
weren't you?
Yeah, if Peter were here.
If Peter were here, it would have gone down. It would have been an absolute success.
Peter would have gone, very good.
He would have gone, oh, I loved that show. That's what he would have said.
He still watches it every week.
Yeah, he
probably.
Watches it all the time.
So hopefully you liked it.
Yeah, did you like it?
Because it's not real. It's not. We're not sponsored by Walking with AI-nosaurs, unfortunately.
With who? Kenneth?
Kenneth Branagh Kiosaurus. He did do the... I didn't realize he did the narration.
I did not know that.
Famous actor man, Kenneth Branagh. Anyway, that's not real. We are, of course, sponsored by wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump. And if you support us over there, you can submit questions to this podcast. There's loads of other flipping tiers available and rewards available, including access to our fortnightly After Dark podcast, which is pretty... weird. We talk about everything that isn't gaming, and we can swear, and we've got some other stuff in the works as well, so keep an eye on the Patreon. Thank you to all of
it's
our patrons
exciting.
Who are supporting us over there, just like
it's green.
Green. This is me. Oh, flipping heck, I wasn't prepared for this at all.
It's right, Peter.
Where's
no,
Peter?
It's goddamn Peter's fault.
Christopher Ridge, thank you, Christopher. He says, Warhammer Age of Sigmar, Realms of Ruin, celebrated an open beta this past weekend. Even if it isn't the type of game that interests you, what are your thoughts on open betas in general? Are they glorified venues for developers to get free Q&A from players? Or can they be... Q&A, that's not it. Free QA from players. Or can they be public crucifixions for players to openly mock early builds of games? Or are they just exciting marketing tools to hype up players before an official release? Best wishes, Bab. Chris, thank you, Chris.
I have a small question before we do this. Yeah. How many subtitles do you think is too many subtitles?
I think two.
Yeah.
Because it's Warhammer, colon, Age of Sigmar,
hyphen,
Realms of Ruin.
Yeah.
Dash.
Dash. Full stop.
Bear in the Big Blue House.
Yeah.
Three.
You think three?
I think there's three of those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But there's main title then. And then I reckon like two subtitles is probably maximum.
Have there been any other games that have two subtitles?
There was one a little while ago that I think was like a JRPG type game that had about four. I don't think it was a Honky Star, but it had about like four subtitles. It just kept going. I remember because I was doing a list or something about it. Or it was in one of my monthly roundups and I was like, Jesus Christ, that's a lot of subtitles.
This is absurd. I'm not. Unfortunately, Warhammer Age of Sigmar... Realms of Ruin is not necessarily one for me, or I imagine for you. I'm not actually familiar with the game at all. But that is a lot of subtitles.
Strategy game.
Okay,
so it's a James Jenkins game.
It's definitely a James Jenkins game. But if you were on the beta, we hope you enjoyed it.
So I think that, I mean, it depends on the game, but for games like this where they have an online multiplayer element, I think the biggest kind of draw for companies to do it is to test whether their servers and their game can actually handle many players playing it.
Yes.
Because it's all well and good being like, well, we've got 100 QA testers and they're all, you know, testing different bits at different times. But until you get like the influx of your player base at any given time, you're not going to know whether it's going to run it or not. Mm-hmm. You can't just like open up a game and be like, well, maybe it'll run. We've only ever had 100 people on the server at any given time. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to add a couple thousand to that. So sure, she'll be fine. That's kind of ultimately what especially online games, that's where I always think that that's what they're testing, because surely, you know, that's quite an important thing to test. But I don't think it takes jobs away from QA testers, because as much as you can submit a bug report if you encounter one, there's not going to be that many people who will be like, oh, I found this glitch in this specific area, let me tell someone about this. They'll just kind of move on with their life. Unless
in
it's a game breaking
all of the
glitch.
Betas that I have ever been involved in, I have never once submitted a bug report.
No.
Never, ever, ever, ever.
No.
Even when the intent wasn't just to stress test the servers.
Because gamers are lazy.
I just want to play it.
I know, they just want to play their game.
I just want to play the
which
game.
Which is fair enough, because that you don't, you know, you paid or you tried to pay to play this. So why would you do work for them for free, you
I'm
know? I don't think maybe it's an exciting marketing tool as well to get people to give a little taste of the game, unless your game is full of bugs and broken, in which case it is a bad thing to do.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think even when you're right, a lot of the open betas or betas these days are largely to stress test servers. Mm-hmm. And then in almost all cases, the game's release and the servers are broken at launch anyway. So it's like, why did you do that? It was literally just a public demo. I remember back in the PS3 and 360 era, betas were like really exciting because that was the first proper console generation where access to the internet and online storefronts were available to everyone. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, you had the Dreamcast and you had flipping the original Xbox. The PS2 had some online functionality as well. But like as a standard built-in part of the flipping system, that was that generation. And so being told, hey, Resistance 2's coming out in like 6 months. If you sign up on their website, you might be able to play the multiplayer like for an entire week now. Mm. It's like, yes, absolutely. That's because then I can like lord it over all my friends. Like, oh, I've played Resistance 2's multiplayer. Don't even worry about it. And you used to be able to, a lot of times it was locked behind pre-ordering the game. You would get access to like the open beta or whatever, or the closed beta. And in those early days, you used to be able to pre-order, because I did this, pre-order from Amazon, get the code for the beta, and then cancel your pre-order. Very naughty. But you could do that, and I used to do that. It is theft. I think Jeff's been okay, though. If anything, he's done better.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't think he's necessarily taken a hit from you thieving.
I think he'll be all right. He's fine. Yeah. But I don't think, at least for me, it doesn't carry the same luster that it once did. Like the appeal of open betas and closed betas aren't nearly as exciting anymore. If it's a game that I'm interested in, that they're like, hey, open beta this weekend, come give it a go, then yeah, it's part stress test, I suppose. It's going to give useful data to the devs for sure. Mm. But it is ultimately just an advertising opportunity.
Yeah,
like 100%. It's a public demo. Like, hey, come try out this game. I remember Destiny was one I was really excited for, the first Destiny. And I got in the closed beta for that. And I was like, this is the beta? This is unbelievable how polished this is. Mm. And then I played it again on the open beta. And I was like, ah, it's the same map. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same. And then the full game came out. And I came to the realization that, oh, that was literally all just marketing.
Yeah.
I just played the same thing three times.
Yeah.
As much as you want, you know, a beta to be the most polished experience possible so you can enjoy it and so that, you know, you can go away and
get a proper experience of the game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that was the first time I think that might have been when my enjoyment and excitement for betas generally fizzled out, because I was like, ah, that was just, I just played the game.
Mm-hmm.
That was just the game. I didn't feel like I was getting a sneak peek at anything necessarily or like, wow, imagine what it's going to be like when they finish the game. Because that was genuinely my thought process. I was playing it like a year out and I was like, imagine what it's going to be like when it's finished. And then it was identical.
Yeah, it was the same.
Like, oh man, that's a shame. I don't imagine that most betas are ever released in a bad enough state by developers or publishers where there can be a public crucifixion.
I'm sure there has been some, but I doubt it'll be like a broken way. It'll probably just be like the game is either not what was promised or it's just not the same thing that players wanted. More than it would be like, oh, it's so buggy and broken. Because I just feel like if it's that buggy and broken, they'll just like push the beta back or like...
Yeah, exactly.
Because normally when people announce betas and stuff, normally it's like, now or next week.
Mm-hmm.
Sign up now for next week. It's never like sign up now for 6 months time. Well, not never, but it's very rarely like sign up now for 6 months time, because normally it's this bit of the game is as polished as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
You can play it. And normally the only backlash they get from that is this game is not what you promised and it is bad. Bad game.
Bad
game. Hashtag dead game.
I think most of the instances where that could be possible is where they get players in and have them sign NDAs. So they can't share anything or talk about it. Because that stuff happens with pretty much every game that gets a beta, is there will be a closed off set. There'll be like a private closed off one, and they might do another one that they call closed because it's not open to everyone. But you can stream it and you can, you know, capture footage and stuff like that. Where it exists in this kind of state where it can be, you know, raked across the coals, probably under heavy embargoes and NDAs, and you won't hear about it. And that's the whole purpose of that's the sort of beta that I want to be taking part in.
Yeah,
where it's like, oh, this
you
is
feel
exciting.
Extra special.
Well, yeah, you not only do you feel like really flipping cool because you're getting super early access, but also I just think it'd be really interesting to see, you know, Call of Duty wouldn't do this because they have internal QA for this very purpose, but like seeing Call of Duty, but it's just like all the maps are untextured and stuff. Like, that'd be fascinating.
It says gun instead of
Exactly.
Gun.
And it goes pew, pew whenever you shoot it.
Yeah.
You're right. It probably has happened in the past, but largely it'll be because it wasn't promised or it's just not working.
I'm much more inclined to give a demo a go than an open beta. Mm-hmm. Like, if I see open beta, I'm like, I'm not really bothered. I'll just wait for the game to come out, or I'll just see what people say about it. But if it's a demo, I'm more like, I don't know if it's just like the connotations of it more. I'm like, I'll give it a go. Because normally
it's
demos, like,
experience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like when I recently having played the Pikmin demo, like that was like an hour and a half of like story that I then won't have to play again when I actually play the game because it'll carry over. Whereas an open beta, like normally you just play it and then you're going to have to play that same section again when you play the game in real life. So
big fan of demos letting you continue where you started.
Yeah. Big fan of that.
Mass Effect 2 did that brilliantly when it finally came to PS3, let you create your character and play like a tiny bit of prologue. And then, in fact, actually, I don't think, maybe the demo, I'm getting completely off track here. Maybe the demo didn't even let you play anything. I think it let you create your character and then it gave you a string of like code that you could note down, which were all the different like options that you'd picked. And then when you got the full game, you could just enter that code and it would immediately have your character there because it would be all the choices you made. And I was like, that's brilliant. I love it. But yeah, the betas are for online games, and I find myself playing online games less and less, or fewer and fewer.
Yes.
And if it's a game that is, if it's like, for example, hey, Call of Duty's doing this new Warzone thing, they've got an open beta this weekend, and me and my friends are like, ah, it's like 4-player, let's all hop in and give it a go, then maybe. But again, that's basically a demo, isn't
yes
it?
It's yeah, basically exactly. a demo. Exactly.
It's time to move on to a section we've never done before, and I bet Peter Plopstin is feeling pretty flipping ploppy right now.
Yeah, because it was his idea, and he was really, really excited to present it to everyone. So I guess we're just going to have to do it for it. He says that he wanted it to be called What We Play In.
Ooh. It's What We Play In time. Time to talk about the games what we have been playing. Billy Ray Warris, what have you been playing today?
Oh, okay. Interesting.
He said that... it's none of our business, which I think is kind of rude considering that he sits there every single week.
Yeah, and doesn't say a single thing.
He's been on every single
podcast. What
does
he even add? Nothing.
We've all missed podcasts. This guy, he's been on every single podcast.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even want to contribute the one time we ask him to. That's very
rude. So rude.
I would normally ask Peter what he's playing, but you know.
He's not here.
He's got
Ashton, I can tell you what I've been playing.
What have you been playing?
I have been playing a few things. I finished Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice.
How did you find that?
Really good.
Okay.
That game's great. The end, like, boss fight has fantastic music. Like, really, really, like, cinematic and, like, atmospheric in terms of the music it gives you. Mm-hmm. The story's really interesting, and I'm really excited for the second one now. Having seen the, like, kind of bit of gameplay footage we've seen of the first, the second game, I'm intrigued by it because it looks different to how the first game played, but then again I suppose maybe it's just bumped up a scoosh and it's kind of a bit bigger, but because it's very linear and kind of like enclosed a lot of the time, like you're in like a corridor but it's like you know, slightly wider corridor, so you can't really tell. But yeah, I think it's great. There's some spooky bits in it. Some spooky bits for sure.
You've been playing it with headphones on?
I have, yeah. And I would definitely recommend it. Like, that's how you should play it because the kind of binaural stuff they've got going on with all the voices is great. Fully recommend that game.
What are the puzzles like? Because I feel like that I want to experience the game, but also it's the. I feel like it's the kind of game that I kind of just want
to
fly through.
To be honest,
if I get stopped at a puzzle, I might give up on it.
The puzzles really aren't that hard. Like, it's mainly just, like, perception puzzles. Like, you'll be given a rune to open a door, and you're in, like, a small space, and you have to just find that rune, normally in, like, wooden beams that have, like, fallen.
Oh, okay, so you just have to angle yourself.
That's pretty much the only puzzles that there are. Okay. And then there might be a few of those, like... in different areas, but I don't really feel like they're like proper puzzly.
Okay.
And most of the time it's very obvious what you have to do because there's not really much else you can do. So it's normally like light this brazier and it will come up with a shadow of the rune that you need because you've lit up the thing. I did have to Google it one time because if you die like seven times, you die in real life. And you have to like basically, I think you probably restart the chapter again, but it basically says like that'd be the end of Senua's journey. But I was stuck on this bit where I just kept dying because I was getting killed by a darkness monster. And I Googled it and it turns out I just had to go the other way. But I hadn't seen that. So I was like, oh, I don't understand what I'm supposed to do. But most of the time I didn't have any issues with it and I figured it out on my own But that bit stumped me. So, but I really enjoyed it, and I fully recommend. If you've got Game Pass or if you've already got it on like Steam or PlayStation or whatever, I fully recommend giving it a go before the first one. Next one, sorry. I played a bit more Minecraft. That almost ended up my relationship this weekend. We're playing a mod pack called Vault Hunters, and you go into like these vaults, and if you die in the vault, you have to get your friends. Like soul and carry it out with you.
Okay.
But if you both die, you potentially lose all your stuff.
Right.
And this stuff that we'd been gathering over the course of like probably about 20 or 30 hours at this point. And Ben died. Mm-hmm. And I said, I haven't got time. I've got a time limit to get out of the vault. I haven't got time to go back and get you. And he said, no, you have. He forced me to go back and get him. Right. And then I died in the vault. I was like throttling him. I was like, how dare you do this to me?
So did you lose all your stuff?
Luckily, I had a bunch of stuff that was soulbound. So it stayed with me and I didn't lose all my stuff.
Thank goodness it was
but
soulbound.
I was filled with rage, like genuine anger. And then I played some more Planet Zoo, which I'm a big fan of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also started this week the Talos Principle.
Ooh, more puzzles.
Because I've been playing Dishonored 2, but I knew I wasn't going to have time to like properly sink my teeth into it because I'm going away. So I was like, I want just something that I can just dip in and out of for a few days. So I gave the Talos Principle a go, and I've been really enjoying it. There's a few puzzles I keep getting stuck on, but then I go and do the other ones, and I come back and I normally like figure out what it is I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's... interesting game. This obviously the second one was announced at the Devolver showcase, and I think also during one of the other showcases as well. So yeah, I'm giving that a go and I'm enjoying it.
Excellent.
Some people puzzles. What have you been playing, Ben?
Well, I'm currently moving house very slowly over the course of this month, basically. So little bits and pieces are being ferried across town, and I have spent basically the last 3 days in a row painting rooms.
Yeah.
I'm so tired. And I have not really had a great deal of time to play games because I've just been...
busy doing adult stuff like Peter Austin always stuff. Is.
Yeah, it's flipping. It's boring, man. I'm like, I'm so tired and I ache everywhere. but I did still find some time to play games, and I've played a couple of them. Played some more Diablo 4. That is a... again, just still such a great brain dead game to play and just murder things and get loads of loot and stuff. Played a little bit more Final Fantasy 16 as well until basically I could feel my eyelids just starting to close. And I was like, okay, it's time for Diablo now because I cannot concentrate on what's happening. I'm still really enjoying that. And I just want to say again, thank God for the active time lore mechanic they've got in that game, where if you pause it during a cutscene and press the touchpad, it brings up little bubbles of all the relevant lore to that cutscene.
That's so good.
So it'll show like, I'm like, wait, what's the, he's gone a Cathic. What the hell does that mean? And then I'll press it. And I know that they'll explain what it is, or I've forgotten what a Cathic is. And then it'll say, oh, this is what this is. And you click on it. It's like, who's this guy again? And I press it and like, ah, there he is. And who's this guy affiliated with? And it'll say, oh, there's this kingdom and this kingdom. So I can always keep refreshing what the hell's going on. It's like, imagine watching Game of Thrones with like a lore Bible that was just relevant to each scene.
It feels very smart.
Thank God for that.
Because games like that are so jam-packed full of lore.
Oh, yeah.
And like this, it's so easy to miss stuff if you just like, don't read a newspaper and or don't quite pay attention for the entirety of a conversation, which I never do.
Yeah.
So yeah, that makes sense and it sounds very... I hope more things kind of take inspiration from that.
Me too. I mean, some might criticize it and say, well, that just sounds like the game's too complicated. But I think it's the next step up from having subtitles turned on all the time, because that's the only way you can hear things is by reading them. And like, especially when you're playing a game, I feel, or watching like a fantasy show or something, and they've got their own terminology. You're like, wait, what is it that they're saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can see it written down, like, right, okay, now I can actually understand it, especially if it's said with an accent or something and you're not really sure what they're doing. So still enjoying Final Fantasy 16. That'll probably be one I play less and less often over the next couple of weeks while the move is still ongoing. But Diablo 4 will definitely continue. I bought in the sale Suicide Guy Sleeping Deeply is what it's called. Some of you may be familiar with this. I thought it was just going to be like a pretty brainless side scroller. I'm saying brainless a lot. I think it's because I'm feeling pretty brainless today. I thought it was going to be like a really simple side scroller. I know nothing about the Suicide Guy series of games. And I bought it because it was less than a pound and also because it had very easy trophies. And so I thought, well, I'll stick this on. I won't even look at a guide. I'll just muck about until I get a load of trophies and then I'll look up the rest. And it's not a side scroller at all. It presented me with the first level, it's first person, and I was enclosed in this sort of waterfall environment. There's a big like tentacle monster that's missing its eye, and there's a boulder and a gigantic eyeball on the floor, and you can walk into it and push them around. It's got like really floaty crap platforming and jumping. And there was a crane, and like I picked up the boulder with the crane and I moved it over and I dropped it on like a catapult that was opposite the tentacle thing. And I thought, well, maybe if I fire that, the boulder will go in its eye socket that's empty at the moment. Mm. And like maybe that'll make it cross and it'll go away. And I did that. And then it just bounced off its face. And I was like, okay, well, that's clearly not it. I'll try again with the, so then I platformed my way back down from the catapult, when I had to move the eyeball over into the right place so I could rotate the flipping, what's it called, the crane. And then I lifted it up with the crane, moved it over. And then I saw that the catapult was still up. So I had to then get off and then platform back up and lower it back down. And then I went back to the crane and I let go of the eyeball and it bounced off the side of the catapult. And then I turned it off because I was like, I can't
and that's
be,
enough of that.
I cannot be bothered. I'm too tired.
Good.
Maybe another day I'll
maybe
come back to
it. Maybe another day.
But I know, actually, I think I did just delete it from the console as well because I was like, this is stupid. It was less than a pound. I'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I've been playing. Do you think you'll be playing anything when you're on holiday? Are you taking anything?
We're taking the Switch and I've got my DS. So I'll play some more Professor Layton probably.
Nice.
I'm also going to attempt to read our book.
No.
Yeah. I've bought a book.
What book?
It's called A Court of Swords and Roses.
Okay. Fantasy?
Fantasy. Okay. Someone recommended it to me because I said, I want to be the girl on holiday who's like cool by the pool reading a book.
Nice,
and someone said, read this. So I'm going to try and read it. And I've made the goal to finish it before I turn 26, which is next year. So I'm...
Oh my God. How big is this book?
It's only like 420 pages, but I know that I'm going to be...
420 pages?
Yeah, baby. I know I'm going to be engrossed in this book for like probably 2 days.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to get bored of reading and I'm never going to read ever again. And then next year I'm going to be like, oh, best finish that book before I turn 26.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So that's your goal.
That's my goal.
What's the book about? Do you know anything about it?
No.
Any romance in it?
I think maybe. Someone said it was a bit sexy.
Well, that was the whole point of books, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's why I exclusively read books about the games industry because I find them irresistible.
Yeah,
they are so hot.
Like porn. I did want to talk about something else though.
Go on.
But I'd like to talk about it in Review Corner.
Ooh. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Review Corner. I'm Ben and Ashton's here too. It's us still.
We're still here. Yeah.
You have been playing a brand new Switch exclusive, Ashton.
I have.
Tell me about it.
Everybody want to switch. It's the sequel to the hit launch title / tech demo. 1-2-Switch.
Interesting that it's got a prefix instead of a suffix for the sequel.
Yeah, it's because I googled it, and this game is legally distinct in terms of like everything because they didn't want to limit people buying 1-2-Switch. So they were like, they've made it basically like totally different. Should I tell you a bit about this?
Yes, please do. Tell me what's the general gist? It's a party game.
It's a party game. In the first version of the game, you could use just the two Joy-Cons from your Switch. Mm-hmm. And you can either play like a board game type thing where you're against another team and every game has like one player on each team. You do a mini game. If you win the mini game, you get to move forward, you know, that kind of thing. This game does have those kind of like party game aspects. However, it's more of like you play for 20 minutes, 40 minutes, 60 minutes kind of vibe. So you can like pick how long you want to play as or play for. Mm. And there's two ways of playing it. You can play with 8 players, all of whom have to have their own Joy-Con. So I don't know anyone who has 8 Joy-Cons.
Right, no, me neither.
I have 2.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have two. Maybe a Switch Pro controller, but that's not going to work. So don't bother using that. So you probably need a couple of pals to come around and all bring their Switches to get the 8 Joy-Cons that you require. Mm-hmm. Or alternatively, you can play up to 100 people if you all have smartphones.
100 people in the same place?
I assume so, yeah.
That's insane.
Absolutely insane.
So if you just have a regular amount of friends over, you could all just use your smartphones.
You could
all use
a bit like Jackbox. You scan a QR code.
All party games should do that.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. It's hosted by MC Horace, who is a man who wears a horse head.
That's hilarious. His name.
Yeah. And I want to tell you about some of the games, right? So we gave a few a go. You play with me.
Yes.
And we played Color Shoot, which is a mobile phone only game, because we only had two Joy-Cons, so we were playing the phone games. Mm-hmm. Color Shoot is where they show you a color and you have, like, I think 45 seconds to run around and try and take a picture of something with that color.
Yeah.
Imagine 100 people doing that.
Yeah.
With like five, it was already chaotic enough. Mm-hmm. But so there's that one. And then we also played, like for 20 minutes. And I think we only ended up actually playing like two games when we were actually doing it.
Played it.
Color Shoot played twice.
Played the same one again, yeah.
And we also played a game called UFOs, which you can play with the Joy-Con, where it's a team game. And there's like UFOs coming out of a spaceship and they're doing weird things with their arms. And you have to mimic them to like try and make them feel welcome. So they're like putting their arms in the air or down low and you have to do that.
Right.
But there's a bunch of games you can play with just Joy-Cons, which are called Balloons, where you pump up a balloon.
Yeah, yeah.
Hip Bump, where you hip bump someone else.
Cool.
Relay Race, a bit like the original game where you had to run and like get the flag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Samurai Sword, which again, a bit like the original game. Mm-hmm. And Joy-Con Hide and Seek, which honestly, I was most excited for because that reminded me of the Wii game that I used to have, where I used to have Wii controller hide and seek, where you hide the Joy-Con, it'll buzz or it'll make noises, and everyone has to find the Joy-Cons that you've hidden.
Okay.
On the phone, as phone only exclusives, there's Bingo. Mm-hmm. There's Ice Cream Parlor.
Okay.
From what I could see, you like scoop, because I didn't get to play all these games. You scoop the ice cream and you have to make notes of orders on your phone. It's basically like working in an ice cream shop.
Okay.
Color
Sounds
Shoot.
A bit too much like working in an ice cream
a
shop.
A little bit. Color Shoot, which we played, and Auction, where you have to bid on things. And it's not just like you put your paddle up. You have to like type in how much money you want to bid and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Then for both, you can play Statues, which is a bit like What's the Time, Mr. Wolf?
Right.
You know, Quiz Show. So you're going to do a quiz.
Mm-hmm.
Ninjas. I don't really know how that one plays.
Okay.
UFOs, which we've played.
Yep.
Jump Rope, which is Jump Rope. So you just jump with the Joy-Con, or I assume someone does the rope as well. Mm-hmm. Squats. But you do squats.
Yes.
Kitchen Timer.
Okay.
Which I didn't get to play, so I do not know how that one plays, but it's called Kitchen Timer.
Maybe it's just a timer.
And then Musical Chairs. Right. It's the last game. So those are all the games you can play. So there's a bunch of stuff that you can get into. The game costs £25 and it's not reviewed particularly well because, I mean, it's fine for a party game.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, like, if it's almost not enough. You know, with Jackbox games, there's like all these legally distinct things. There's like different things for different people. Yeah. You know, if you don't want to be funny, there's other games you can play. This all seems very much like very similar things. I mean, you can sit down and play Bingo for like 20 minutes on your phone if you fancy. You can also play it on your own if you want to do Quiz Time or Bingo on your lonesome.
Yeah.
I like the fact you can use your phones. I think that's a fantastic addition to the game series. I think it's ridiculous to expect people to have 8 Joy-Cons. The first game only required 2, and I know that it's a different game and they've amped some things up, but 8 Joy-Cons to me just seems insane.
Yeah, like, why would you even ask people to do that?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't even know you could. So regularly going to be no.
Exactly. I didn't even know you could get 8 Joy-Cons on a Switch. I thought it was 6 max. So I was very surprised by the 8 players that you can have with the Joy-Cons. So yeah, I think, you know, there's some fun to be had with this game. Mm-hmm. We had a good time when we were playing it. Admittedly,
We're
quite drunk.
We were so drunk.
We were so drunk.
We were all so drunk. We were just saying this before we started recording. We all should have been in bed.
We absolutely should have been in bed.
And
instead,
we were screeching around your living room, like taking photos of colours.
Yeah, I'm like rummaging in the fridge looking for a courgette to
you
take
did
a picture.
Win. You got the greenest green.
It
there.
Was very green. And like, it was fun when we were playing it. Mm-hmm. And maybe we played it for 20 minutes, but we played for 10 minutes and then we were like, okay. That's enough now.
Yeah.
So maybe if you've got people around and you're like, you know, just want something to just doss around with for a bit, I think you could have a bit of fun with this game. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think £25 is potentially a bit too expensive for what it is, but given that it's on the Switch, it will never be any cheaper. So,
well, here's the thing, because the first game didn't review brilliantly either.
No.
I remember that because I did the Switch launch games video, which you should all go and watch because it's really good and also doesn't have as many views as it should. And in that, I think the wording I used, I may have been a bit hyperbolic, was it's the perfect party game. Just because it makes you make an ass of yourself.
Yeah.
And you can be drunk or you can be sober and there'll just be two of you like trying to pull your gun out fast is to shoot each other in an old Western. And fundamentally, it may not be overly complex and it may not be particularly good, but it's still it's the reaction of the people around you that makes a party game fun.
Well,
sometimes
we played that, specifically the shooting one of 1-2 Switch, for literally about an hour and a half at the Christmas party because everyone was just taking turns because the mini game took literally less than a minute.
Yeah.
And these ones feel like they take a lot longer because they're a lot more in depth. So if you're looking for someone that's maybe, if you've got a bunch of kids, then maybe you can give this one a go and play it for a bit longer. But I think if you're looking for something the same vibe as 1-2 Switch, where you pick up, you play this one mini game and everyone can just keep playing it for ages because it's literally a minute long experience, then maybe this one is a bit too much. It's almost like they've kind of leaned into it too far and they've kind of not figured out what people liked about the first game, and people didn't like that much about the first game, so maybe people would enjoy it, and I'm willing to give it another go and at the next gathering we all have play another game of 1-2 Switch and see if people actually enjoy it when we've not had so many drinks,
so many alcohols. That may be the difference maker. But thank you very much to Nintendo.
Oh, yes.
Sending us the code for this. And we do have to say, per ASA guidelines, this is technically classified as an ad because we were gifted the code. However, there was no financial compensation in exchange for the coverage. We're just talking about it as is. So thank you to Nintendo for sending us the code.
Thank you, Nintendo.
Wonderful. Should we go back to those two really cool people who are doing the rest of the podcast?
I think we should. They sound so nice. Well, wasn't that fun?
That was fun. Thanks, us.
Yeah, we did such a good job there. It's time for question two now. It comes from Bartek Kubica. Bap, wow, no way. Sony's broadly working on an integrated system combining gameplay with help/guide. I think it's a very interesting idea as long as it's optional and it won't steal our data. Pretty please.
It will.
What do you think about it? Blowing a kiss, Bartek.
Thank you, Bartek.
Would you like me to tell you a bit more about what this patent that they've got is?
I would love to know more.
So this report is just because Sony have filed a patent for something. There's not announced anything. You've not missed it.
Yeah, they do. Companies do this all the time, so there's a chance that this may never happen.
Yeah, it may never happen. The patent describes, this comes from Gaming Bolt, by the way. The patent describes a method for real-time in-game gaming assistance that players can seek from experts should they find themselves stuck in a game. As the patent describes, should a situation ever arise, the method will try and connect players with experts who will help them progress further, or in case no said experts are available, show them gameplay videos. The idea here, in a nutshell, seems to be better integrating the exercise of looking up guides and walkthroughs while you're playing a game without having to need to switch devices to look them up. Sony's implemented similar ideas of late, such as the PS5's game help mechanic, so it would make sense to see them try and further emphasize a similar feature. Of course, as is always the case with patents, this isn't necessarily indicative of new features that Sony will definitely implement in the future, and may very well just be a case of company protecting its ideas for now, at least. Whether it comes to fruition remains to be seen.
I saw this and immediately thought, hang on, wasn't this the entire point of the activity cards and help center? Because they made a big song and dance before the PS5 came out that you'll be able to, if you're stuck on an area, you'll be able to look up guides and it'll suggest YouTube videos to you. I've never used them either because I think they are bad, and I don't think they're very well integrated at all. No. The only time I ever see the activity cards are where it says, would you like to resume the activity you're doing in a moment? It's I don't trust you. I'd rather just load up the game and click continue.
And the activity's normally just the mission that you're doing.
They are, but they do also have help bits as well. Well, they certainly did in, I think, maybe a couple of the launch titles. Mm-hmm. I have not checked back since, but certainly this is what it sounds like they always wanted to do.
But it seems it is honestly probably my worst nightmare to ever do this. It's you almost talk directly with someone who is an expert in the game.
This is why it will be different.
Which to me is do they call you up and they say, hey, idiot, here's how you solve the puzzle. Or is it a little text feature? Because texting on a PlayStation 5 would be really annoying.
Do you allow remote access to your console?
Yeah.
Someone just do it for me? And how many clips are going to go online of the experts failing?
Yeah.
Or
and do the
deleting
experts
your save data?
Just have in front of them, I did when I worked in an escape room,
the solution.
Here's what you would say to someone if they asked for this question.
Well, This is not a new idea because Nintendo did this in the 90s. They had their helpline where you could call up and ask gurus for help, and they would be able to provide tips and assistance. And they basically just employed nerds all over the country and in the United States as well to guide players through. Obviously, the technology is far more involved now. I think it's interesting that they're considering introducing this when there is always progress to be made in the realm of accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
But when games are more accessible than ever, at what point are you just... I mean, this. I'm being dramatic here.
Yeah.
But at what point are you essentially just not really playing the game? Because if you are getting to a stage where you're stuck, and as soon as you have any and again, yeah, I'm being over the top here.
Yeah.
As soon as you run into any issues, you're like, right, hello, PlayStation Kev, it's me again.
Yeah.
I'm stuck. Can you do this bit for me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'd be a nice option to have, but is that service really necessary? Because, you know, yes, you're playing the rest of the game, but like, just watch it instead.
Well, that's what I mean, because obviously, like, the initial like thing they want to do is connect you with an expert. But if there's no one available, they'll just show you a gameplay video. Which, to me, I would rather they just did that.
Yeah.
Like, here's a video on how to do it.
And how would, like...
But how would it know what you're stuck on exactly?
Well, exactly. How would it know? And if it's going to use an algorithm to show you stuff, it could show you anything.
Like, yeah.
It could show you any old nonsense, you know?
If it's like, oh, I'm looking for the final, I don't know, gold block in my Lego game.
Hmm.
Can you please, find it for me? I can't find it anywhere. How is it going to know where you are and what you need to do?
I'm already like, that's picturing normally the Kotaku headlines of,
oh,
like...
Yeah.
PlayStation 5 help center signposts 6-year-old Minecraft player to like some expletives riddled video or something.
Yeah. It just types up Minecraft tutorial and it's like from 2009 when the game first came out.
It's like truly hateful content.
Yeah. But like, the thing is about it is that like when you go on a walkthrough website, it all normally takes a good few minutes to even find the thing that you're specifically looking for.
Mm.
Like when I was playing Assassin's Creed 2, the amount of times I had to Google like, oh, where do I find this specific symbol? And then you have to go between two websites where one told me what the name of that was and the other one would only tell me like the name of this symbol and then the location.
Or my favorite.
But I didn't know what the name of it was.
It just takes an out of context screenshot and just goes, it's here.
And you're like, cool,
what?
Thanks.
Where the
thanks
hell's
so
that?
So much.
Where is that?
Here's cobbled building. Brilliant. I'll find that by myself in this four
world
maps
of
cobbled buildings.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be interested to see how it would work. However, I would feel like I would never use it if I had to talk to someone directly. I don't even call up my doctor. You think I'm going to call someone on PlayStation and be like, can you tell
Domino's.
Me how? Yeah. I think I'm going to call someone and be like, please, can you help me figure out this puzzle? I'm too stupid to figure it out. Like, I'm not going to do that. Sorry. I'm not going to do it. And I don't want to type on PlayStation either because that will take me as long as it would take me to just type on my phone to ask for help.
Yeah.
I don't see this becoming an active and like...
No, they might just use aspects of
it. Yeah, they may do.
But again, like this was the whole pitch behind those help cards in the first place.
I
the
would
video
rather
aspect at least.
That the help cards like ticked stuff off for you. Like,
this is another, it's busted, Sony. Flipping fix it. This is something I've always stared jealously at over on Xbox, is that the flipping achievements track how far through you are. And on PlayStation has always been, I don't know. I suppose you'll get it when you get it. And then you'll follow a guide and do them all and the trophy won't pop. And it's like, well, how many do I have? Like, how close am I? I have no idea.
I mean, the trophy cards can be quite helpful sometimes.
Sometimes.
Where it'll be like, get, I don't know, like 100 kills. But it would never tell you the percentage. It would just be like, you haven't done this. And I'm like, but how many do I have then?
Yeah.
Tell me how many.
Yeah, you have to go through the in-game stats and like try and work it out if the
when
game
playing...
even tracks that. But Xbox does that.
Yeah.
Xbox allows you to see. And I swear that, again, like some games do it on PlayStation, but some don't. And I
it
don't know
like
what's going on.
It must be like first-party slash like launch titles.
Oh, it's so frustrating.
That they've able to like integrate it a bit better in. But like how difficult can it be? If Xbox can manage it, why can't Sony manage it?
If flipping Xbox could do it.
Well, I'm just saying, they have games that aren't theirs as well, so
yeah,
why?
They've been doing it this whole time, and there's no reason, quite frankly. It should just be standard.
So rather than doing this, Sony, can you just fix the help
cards?
Just
make sure, look, if you're going to have car activity cards, can you make them worthwhile?
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, when I see, I never seek them out.
No.
But like when I was playing God of War, for example, I would start it up and, or like I would hover over it to start it up and I could see the activity cards without wanting to. Mm. And it would say, oh, you're about like 26% of the way through this little bit. You maybe got an hour left. And it's like, that's honestly, even if I was playing on a time limit,
yeah,
you know, that would be really helpful information. But even then,
if
it's,
I knew
like,
when dinner was and I had this much time, I didn't figure out, can I finish this level before dinner's ready?
Yeah.
You know, those are useful.
It's useful information.
Just a bit more.
I never seek it out though.
No.
I never look for it. I never want to know it. It's just nice to have the option.
Yeah.
Maybe we need some more options. So sort out the cards, please, PlayStation.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Don't bother with this nonsense.
Don't
I don't care
with
about
this nonsense. Yeah, just go on YouTube and get some like, because that's what it sounds like you're going to do, unless you want to talk to PlayStation Kev and tell him that, yeah, I'm bad at, I'm being bad at Alan Wake again. And
Alan Wake made me cry again, PlayStation Kev. Can you come and give me a cuddle? Thanks, PlayStation.
That's
Kev.
Way beyond the remit of PlayStation Kev's
but
job.
But he's an expert and he will assist me in real-time in-game gaming assistance. And if I'm crying because it's too scary and I need gaming assistance.
Pop on your PSVR 2 headset and have a virtual hug with PlayStation Kev.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be a bit strange, wouldn't it?
Would be a bit. Well, a bit peculiar, maybe. A bit weird news.
Weird news.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. Remember, if you want to submit some weird video game news to us and get a shout out here, you can do so by responding to our social media post on Facebook and Twitter during the Tuesday of the week, during the Tuesday of the week. Mm-hmm. However, if you want to guarantee a shout out at this point in the podcast, you need to go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump, support us at a certain tier, and become a podcast producer just like
G.Y. Goliath,
Nicole Hansen,
Duncan Wilson,
Katie Garrett,
Ellie Nicholas,
Nexus Polaris,
Gabrielle Philippink,
and Blake Thomas.
Why did you sound like a robot?
I just thought it would be fun.
Fair enough.
An AI-nosaur.
Hey, it was fun.
Hey, thank you. I had fun. Did you have fun?
I had so much fun.
I wasn't talking to you.
Oh. Did you have fun?
Good. Let's do some weird news.
I have some weird news. It was submitted by Mitch Goodall and James Matthews, which isn't my cousin, but this guy's not my cousin.
Ah, just doxing your cousin.
Yeah, well, it's quite a non-regular name. I'm sure there's a few of them out there. Games Radar from Jordan Gerblick. Cool name. Mm-hmm. Baldur's Gate 3 doesn't mind if you sleep with a druid when he's turned into a grizzly bear.
Sick.
And then the subtitle is, have you ever considered the joys and pleasures of sexual congress with a wild-shaped druid? Have you ever considered the sexual, the joys and pleasures of sexual conquest with a wide-shaped druid?
I haven't before, but I am now.
Yes. Baldur's Gate 3 developer Larian Studios absolutely won't stop you from surrendering to your desire to make love with a druid turned into a grizzly bear. In its final development update before the game's August 3rd release date, Larian Studios explicitly confirmed you can shag a bear in Baldur's Gate 3, provided, of course, that you and the wild-shaped druid in question consent.
Good.
Yeah. Have you ever considered the joys and pleasures of sexual congress with a wild-shaped druid, said lead writer Adam Smith in one of the more surreal press releases I've ever read. Because at Larian, we have, and ultimately landed on the side of giving the people what they want, tender, consensual romance with a man temporarily transformed into a grizzly bear.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
The way they're wording it is, you're having sex with a druid who's taking the form of a bear.
Yeah.
It's a druid. Who's taking the form of a bear? It's a druid. You're having sex with a druid.
No.
The important thing to remember here is that you're having
Having sex with a grizzly bear.
You're having sex with a bear. Yeah. Have you ever thought about what was the wording that they used? Have you ever thought about
The joys and pleasures of sexual congress
with a bear?
With a bear.
That's what this is.
That's the real question.
You're not having sex with. I know you are having sex with a druid technically, but what you are physically having sex with is a bear.
Yeah.
Like an actual
That's
animal.
Like saying, oh, well, I would have sex with a dog if it was a person that was turned into a dog.
No, you're having sex with a dog.
You're having sex with a dog. That's just you having sex with a dog, all right?
It's not normal.
It's not.
But own it.
Yeah. Just stop lying to yourself. Yeah. I'm not really sure what else to say here, but the more romance options, the better, I suppose. Grizzly bears might not be my thing, but if they're your thing, you're technically a man, but... And you're the technically a man but currently a grizzly bear thing. Who's to say you shouldn't be able to express your love for one and another in the most intimate way? Larian Studios itself acknowledged the news with a sly wink on Twitter. It's just a bear. Picture of a bear.
Smiling
because it's being pleasured, because it's a man turned
into a
bear.
Have you ever thought about filleting a bear? Well, now you can.
But it's a man turned into a bear, so it's different.
Technically, it's a man.
It's actually allowed, all right?
But have you ever thought about filleting a bear? Now's your chance.
Baldur's Gate 3 offers ample opportunities to romance with the characters you'll grow closest with, and no two relationships follow the same formula, added Smith. Emotional intimacy with one party member may slowly bud into mutual physical desire with one party member, while
being
a relationship that begins with a night of post-goblin slaughtering passion could also blossom in something vulnerable and sweet given proper care. Our Baldur's Gate preview doesn't delve into bear-man relations, but it does explain why we are already in awe of this impossibly detailed game. I'll be frank, it's really hard to pad out a story about grizzly bear sex, so I'll leave you with the guide to Baldur's Gate 3 races and which you should choose.
Okay, so I'll be frank and you'll be bear.
Have sex with a bear.
Confirmed, bear sex.
I think they announced it during a panel, like from one of the other articles I read, they were like, they talked about it at a panel and they showed a clip of like the man and the bear holding one another. That's and I'm beautiful. Like, what an absolutely insane place to, not even a place, but like, imagine turning up to a Baldur's Gate 3 press conference and being so excited to find out.
And the crowd goes wild.
Yeah, and they show you a man shagging a bear.
They have all been waiting for.
Finally, a Baldur's Gate 3 fan can play and shag a bear.
It's bear shagging.
But it's legal. It's fine because it's a man turned into a bear.
It's not technically just a bear. It is a man taking on the form of a bear, but also it is a bear.
Yeah, you are still having sex with a bear.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That is very weird.
It is weird.
I've got some weird news.
Yeah.
This comes from Johnny Mac at JohnnyMac13 on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's from Eurogamer and Ed Nightingale. Final Fantasy 16 is being adapted into a Japanese musical.
Oh my gosh.
Interested now?
Yeah.
Okay. Final Fantasy 16, Square Enix's latest game in the renowned series, is being adapted into a musical in Japan. The Takarazuka Review are responsible for the show, which will be performed in Tokyo in two runs from May to June and then from July to August next year. The Takarazuka Review Theatre Company is known for the fact its members are all women who play both male and female parts.
Yeah.
So yes, this means the deep brooding tones of Sid and Clive will be played by women in the show. I want to hear those voices. That would be amazing. Because their voices are ridiculous.
I'd like to see them do an English accent.
Mm. I imagine it'll be in Japanese. Yeah. But who knows?
I'd like to see them speak Japanese with an English accent.
Oh.
That would be really good.
Konnichiwa.
Yeah.
There you go. That's what it sounds like. I'm not sure what this means for Torgal, though. I'm hoping for some sort of intriguing puppetry. And then he goes on to say, it's not the first time a Final Fantasy game has been adapted for the stage. Earlier this year, Final Fantasy X was performed in Japan as a Kabuki stage play, which you can stream online. Mm. Kabuki is performed by an all-male cast, so the Final Fantasy 16 Takarazuka review is a fascinating reversal.
Wow.
Then it talks about sales, and you can follow topics on Eurogamer if you want.
Yeah, you can.
The single player topic, if you'd like to follow that, you can do it.
Will do. Is there a musicals topic on Eurogamer?
Nope, well, there is not. That's all you get.
Then what's the point? Do you think it would make a good musical having played the game?
Is
there moments where you could see, now would be a good place for a song?
There's lots of intrigue. I would be interested to see how they would do the icon battles, the big monster battles and stuff.
Ballads. It would be like a ballad off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a character called Balladov in the game as well. But there's certainly a man who like stomps around because he's really cross because his girlfriend died. So there's revenge.
Oh, you'd have like
romance.
Her dead body,
okay,
like singing to him, telling him to fight on and that.
Okay.
I really want to see this. I'll watch it in Japanese, I won't understand a thing, but I'll have a great time anyway.
No doubt it will hit the headlines again this time next year.
When it comes out. Yeah.
And then we may be able to stream it online at the Kabuki.
Fingers crossed for a UK tour.
You couldn't have been any less sincere if you tried.
What are you talking about? I'm really excited for
Brilliant. It's time for the big discussion. It is big discussion time. Time for the big discussion, which this week is, of course, about Xbox again.
Woohoo!
This comes courtesy of Discord Ray Walrus on our Patreon Discord group. Thank you, which is where we went to ask for this because this news broke yesterday.
Last night.
Last night at the time of recording. So there may be updates on this now, as you know, we recorded this on Wednesday. So bear that in mind. What are your guys or girls' thoughts on the Activision Blizzard acquisition? Oh, I'm going to tell you. But first, I've got some delicious context for
you. Please,
so
I love context.
This comes from VGC and Tom Ivan. On Tuesday, Judge Jacqueline Scott Cawley of the United States District Court for the Northern District of California denied the FTC's motion for a preliminary injunction. Judge Cawley's ruling concluded Microsoft's acquisition of Activision has been described.
You're doing so good.
Thank you. I'm only one sentence in. As the largest in tech history, it deserves scrutiny. That scrutiny has paid off. Microsoft has committed in writing, in public, and in court to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation for 10 years on parity with Xbox. It made an agreement with Nintendo to bring Call of Duty to Switch, and it entered several agreements to go
to Switch. Oh, no. That's going to make a Switch explode.
Maybe it'll be streaming only.
Maybe.
And it entered several agreements to, for the first time, bring Activision's content to several cloud gaming services. This court's responsibility in this case is narrow. It is to decide if, notwithstanding these current circumstances, the merger should be halted, perhaps even terminated, pending resolution of the FTC administrative action. For the reasons explained, the court finds the FTC has not shown a likelihood it will prevail on its claim this particular vertical merger in this specific industry may substantially lessen competition. To the contrary, the record evidence points to more consumer access to Call of Duty and other Activision content. The motion for a preliminary injunction is therefore denied. I'm not done yet. We're grateful to the court for swiftly deciding in our favor, said Microsoft's head of gaming, Phil Spencer. The evidence showed the Activision Blizzard deal is good for the industry, and the FTC's claims about console switching, multi-game subscription services, and cloud don't reflect the realities of the gaming market. For its part, Microsoft wants to try and push the deal through before the current merger agreement expires on the 18th of July, after which Activision Blizzard could walk away with a $3 billion termination fee if an extension isn't agreed. So they're trying to push that through. Currently, at the time of recording, the only holdout, I believe, is the CMA.
Yeah.
We've got news on that as well. The UK's Competition and Markets Authority, CMA, has agreed to pause legal proceedings with Microsoft and Activision Blizzard with a view to reaching an agreement over the games company's proposed merger. The announcement follows the news that Microsoft has been cleared to acquire Activision Blizzard in the United States after winning its court battle with antitrust regulator, the Federal Trade Commission. We stand ready to consider any proposals from Microsoft to restructure the transaction in a way that would address the concerns set out in our final report, a CMA spokesperson said. In order to be able to prioritize work on these proposals, Microsoft and Activision have agreed with the CMA that a stay of litigation in the UK would be in the public interest, and all parties have made a joint submission to the Competition Appeal Tribunal to this effect. In its own statement, Microsoft President Brad Smith confirmed that the company had agreed with the CMA that pausing the UK litigation would be the best way to proceed. After today's court decision in the US, our focus now turns back to the UK, he said. While we ultimately disagree with the CMA's concerns, we are considering how the transaction might be modified in order to address those concerns in a way that is acceptable to the CMA. So there we are. That is where we stand at the time of recording. Mm-hmm. It's basically through, done and dusted in America and pretty much everywhere else in the world. The lone standout is the CMA. We've discussed the CMA's issues with it before, which were basically down to cloud gaming rather than anything else. Xbox said, well, fine, maybe Microsoft just won't be in the UK anymore.
Yeah, maybe Activision just won't sell there anymore.
Which is which was a very strange response, quite frankly. But it sounds like, in the wake of the FTC stuff, the CMA and Xbox and Microsoft and Microsoft and Activision Blizzard have now agreed that they will try and work on a solution to this.
According to what I've read, this resubmission that they're doing could take a good few months to go through and like get sorted. And they referred to us, the UK, as a global outlier, which made me feel sad. Right. But do you know what I think would be so funny? Like, just like the perfect icing on this cake was that if on the 18th of July, Activision Blizzard actually say, nah.
Not fuss, actually.
Actually don't want it very much. I'll take the $3 billion.
Yeah.
And I'm outie.
I wasn't aware of this deadline. That's really interesting. Presumably all parties will negotiate an extension to that. But yeah, they've not got a lot of road left if they want to get it ahead of this. Ahead of it. Does that mean that this has been going on for a year?
It must have. Well, I was thinking like that it was kind of very soon after the Activision Blizzard scandal kind of all was kicking off, which was like January last year. And then there was like a good kind of few months where there was a bit of limbo. And then Microsoft were like, we're buying them. So it must be about a year now or just over a year since we kind of started talking about it. And then gradually it's become more and more chaotic.
I remember I got tattooed and then I had the day off the next day as a recovery day. And I was in bed drunk. And I saw the news come in and I tweeted like, oh, this is a terrible thing. I remember that. And I haven't, that would have been at the beginning of last year.
Yeah.
So maybe it was.
I think it's so interesting. And like, it almost kind of makes it feel less like dramatic when only thing anyone's talking about is Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Like, I know that obviously there's other games Activision own, but the fact that all of this was like so focused on the Call of Duty game.
It's just such a Goliath, isn't it?
It's madness.
It's so insane. And it's also just a franchise that has, it's one of the only franchises that has managed to settle into this rhythm where they have won every single year.
Yeah, I can't think of a single other game where apart from sports titles. I can't think of a single other game that like has that power, you know? Like there's no other developers that own a game like Call of Duty, like Activision Blizzard do, where like people are saying, please don't take that off my console.
It's
like,
still so
that's
relevant.
Mad, isn't it?
So relevant, even today. Like and it's been relevant since I would say 2007.
Yeah.
With Modern Warfare is where it really, really kicked up a gear. That's nuts. That's unprecedented. And in 10 years' time, who knows if anyone's gonna care about Call of Duty? You know, we don't know what Activision Blizzard under Microsoft is going to look like or how Call of Duty is going to turn out. You would hope that they would just keep it the same. But we'll see how important that is. Another big one that they're really interested in, and I believe this was shown in some of the court documents that were released, is that they have huge plans in the mobile space.
Yeah.
And acquiring Activision Blizzard that have, King underneath it? Yeah, which is your Candy Crush and all that kind of stuff. That's also worth a ginormous amount of money, mm-hmm. and they will want to leverage that, particularly if they roll out some sort of mobile Game Pass offering, you know?
Well, this is the thing, right? Like, when we talk about other acquisitions, and I mean, when you look at, like, you know, Sony acquiring studios and stuff, and we talked about this when we first heard about it, and I still think it is very relevant to bring up, the fact that the Activision are so powerful in the sense of, like, they own so much stuff and so many big, like, huge money makers and huge titles and big, like, long-running franchises like Call of Duty. There's no other, like, company out there other than maybe, like, Ubisoft and EA, which have that same scope in terms of, like, games they own, companies under them, money that they make from these games. That's why this was always such a big issue, was because of how big Activision is. And still now, like a year on from when we first discussed this, I still feel the same way. That I just am so worried about this precedent that is being set. I know that realistically, it's probably not going to change that much stuff, but I just think Microsoft owning a company as big as Activision Blizzard, and Activision Blizzard being so willing to sell, I mean, for an insane amount of money, doesn't fill me with happiness.
No, I completely agree. We've talked about it before, as you said. Like, it's just putting aside my personal preference of where I like to play games, and that in a decade's time, a franchise that may not be relevant anymore may become an exclusive to Xbox platforms, you know. Beyond all that, I don't want to see one of the biggest companies in the entire world buy another one of the biggest companies in the entire world, specifically within one industry as well. That doesn't, as many promises as you can make to, like, hey, we're still going to share these, we're still going to make sure that the games are shared around, it just feels fundamentally wrong for a $1 trillion company to just be able to do that.
Yeah.
And just buy up one of the biggest players in the industry.
And before people get mad, and I know you will, because you think we hate Xbox, most of us play across platforms. Like, I play a lot of Xbox games. I play on PC, I play on Switch, and I play on PlayStation. I have no, like, outlying loyalty to any company.
This is not going
to, however,
it's not going to affect us day to day.
It's not going to affect me day to day, and that realistically, like, it's not going to affect that much, but it just feels wrong. It feels bad. I don't like it when Sony acquires big studios. You know, there's a lot of, I saw a tweet this morning that was like, Sony acquiring so-and-so studio is bad, Microsoft acquiring so-and-so studio is bad. These two things are bad, and it feels bad. And I know that maybe, like, we didn't talk about it when Sony acquired their last studio, whatever the last
they're
one
not
was.
Acquiring big boys though.
No,
apart Bungie, what I
was gonna say, Bungie
huge,
was probably their biggest, but
I think that it's ultimately semantics, but I do feel there's a difference between buying a mega publisher and buying a developer.
Oh no, 100%.
No matter how big the developer is and how renowned they are, You can't compare Activision Blizzard purchase to buying Bungie. It's just not the same thing. Both are bad.
Yeah.
But I think it's very different.
But one is worse than most.
I would hate it if Sony bought Activision Blizzard.
I'd feel this exact same way.
I wouldn't want it. Why would you want that?
It's like I say, if it's them turning around buying Ubisoft. Ubisoft have so many developers underneath them. They have so many different studios. They have so many, like, different things that fall under the Ubisoft umbrella. You buying them and subsequently buying all of these other things, it reminds me a bit of Embracer Group, in the sense that they've now bought everything and now they've got too much, and they're just going to start selling stuff. And Microsoft, they're not going to run out of money. They're not going to run out of money.
But
however, they might run out of ability to deal with that many studios.
Yeah, I was going to say, they don't have, one of the biggest criticisms, whether this is correct or not, leveled at Microsoft and their management of their, is their management of their studios. The fact that, you know, Redfall was allowed to happen the way it was. The fact that the Hellblade game has been in development for, what, nearly 5-6 years or something crazy like that. Now it's been ages since since that was announced, and that's meant to be, I don't know, the scope may have gone up, to be fair, but I remember the original one was always pitched as AAA indie. So this is it looks gorgeous, don't get me wrong, and I don't know the ins and outs, but, like, on face value, if this is an indie game, what the flipping heck is going on, and why aren't Microsoft down there smashing in doors? Come on, what's going on? Do they just not have the, they clearly, there's clearly some sort of issue with the infrastructure of the management process behind these studios. And now they're adding, the web's getting way more complicated.
Yeah.
So unless Activision Blizzard essentially remains a fully autonomous thing that is just owned by Microsoft, then I don't know what this means in terms of managing studios. No. If that is indeed an issue currently, that's not going to get any better.
Like
now,
we said, we talked about how right now, I don't really feel like you can trust Microsoft to manage the studios. The last 6 months that they've had, I mean, maybe the last year, like we were talking about after Redfall was released, after Phil Spencer did that interview with...
Kind of funny.
I don't trust them right now. They don't have the best track record for the last 12 months. The stuff they've been putting out has not been hitting in the same way that it should be. And again, not to... What was it that Peter said yesterday on a video we filmed? Bum off?
Not to bum off,
which apparently means to suck up to Sony.
Yeah, it sounds way worse than it is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the games that they've been bringing out, a lot of their first-party games, have... done really well because they have a much smaller web of games, admittedly still huge, a much smaller web of developers, a much smaller web of publishers, and it almost feels like they can spend more time and more effort on these games. So I don't feel good about it. I'm happy that maybe it's over soon.
Yeah, that is something
to
celebrate.
And we can finally start to see how that's going to actually change.
We'll not have to hear about this anymore, hopefully. Yeah. We'll see. We've got the CMA to go first. Yeah. I think we're all in agreement here at this table, you, Billy, and I.
Yes.
That huge, huge mega corporation buying huge entity is bad.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how it affects day-to-day Xbox players, there are benefits to this.
Oh yeah,
and
definitely.
That's gonna be nice, you know, when Call of Duty eventually does go on Game
and goes
Pass.
On Game Pass day one, and everyone gets it for essentially free. I know it's not free, but and then a lot of other Activision titles that they've got. Maybe when they release the next Spyro game, that's gonna go on Game Pass day one, and I ask PlayStation folks, we're not gonna get to play it.
No, they aren't. And they suck it, PlayStation.
Suck
folks.
It, PlayStation folks.
I do wonder if
couldn't be me.
Maybe no, not at all. I do wonder if maybe much like Sony are trying to learn from Bungie about how to make a live service game work. I wonder if Xbox could take some cues from how Call of Duty is managed.
Well, because I don't really want that either.
Well, no. Hear me out.
Okay.
Just in terms of having, because they've got all these studios and feels like we've been talking, the entire world has been talking since the inception of Game Pass, where it's like, okay, well, if they get their ducks in a row, they could feasibly have a AAA exclusive every 3 months.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
If they manage to line it up right, it would require immense management that we have, quite frankly, not seen so far.
Mm-hmm.
Call of Duty, without fail, releases every November in at least a highly polished state.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, they're not all as good as each other.
No.
But they rarely have, like, disastrous bugs. They're always, like, one of the best looking games visually each year. Mm-hmm. And it's because they have this 3-year development cycle and they have set teams working on each one.
Yeah.
And then it's their turn every 3 years. Could they examine and maybe get the people who are overseeing that internally at Activision Blizzard to potentially maybe, you know, have a Zoom call with someone who's looking after Obsidian or something? You know, just get some sort of structure in place. Making games is really complicated and so hard, and I get that. And there have been so many complications with COVID over the past few years and remote working. But you know what hasn't faltered? Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Every single year, it is there.
Yeah.
And whether it's under pain of death by working these developers, you know, to the bone, which we have heard is quite likely, or not, which is unlikely.
Yeah.
There's got to be something that can be learned, especially if you're buying them. There's got to be some sort of practice that can be applied to elsewhere in your business.
Yeah.
And that would only be a good thing for everyone who's on Game Pass and has an Xbox.
Maybe we'll eat our words. Maybe, you know,
love to eat
in
my
a
words.
Year's time,
I would love that.
We'll look back and we'll say, right, Activision was acquired by Microsoft a year ago. How is it going? And we'll say, it's going so well. What idiots we were to be so negative about it.
I think it's okay to have an issue with the practice of buying huge entities. However, in practice, in terms of what it means to you and I playing games day to day, it could only be beneficial. That could genuinely be
exactly.
the case.
It's okay to be excited about it, but yeah. also have that underlying feeling of,
because that's
really
the world
this.
We live in.
Yeah.
Well, because
yeah.
it's impossible to live a truly altruistic, yes, you know, exactly. lifestyle, because everything is sort of draped in a veneer of horribleness.
Yeah.
Even if you can't see it on the surface.
And that's the joy of being a human.
That's the joy of being a human being alive in 2023.
Yeah.
Just because we're criticizing the business practice doesn't mean that we can't be excited for the end result on a base level of like playing games on Xbox. That could be good. If you're playing games on other platforms, it sounds like you're going to be catered to for at least a decade, at which point, who even knows what the games industry is going to look like, because we don't know who the major players will be. We do not know whether there'll be physical consoles anymore. Mm-hmm. We don't know if it'll all be subscription-based stuff. Who flipping knows? So you've got 10 years to come to, if you're really upset by this, because you feel like games are being taken away from you, not necessarily because you think that a $1 trillion company buying a $69 billion company is a bad thing, then you've got 10 years to come to terms with that. And you've got 10 years to just enjoy things as they are in the status quo.
Yes, exactly.
And that's okay. I have one final point that I'd like to talk about.
Yes.
Because Sony were fighting this tooth and nail.
Yeah, they really
were the UK CMA of the game scene. In this whole scenario, I think Jim Ryan was quoted at some point saying, "It's my mission to stop this."
Yeah.
Or something. I will die before you buy Activision Blizzard.
He's actually dead. He's been killed off. They killed him.
He's dead now. That's where we're
R.I.P. that guy.
Jim Ryan. He's from Newcastle. Did you know that?
I did know that.
Yeah. That's great fun, isn't it? Anyway, so I wonder, and I'm worried, that there might be some sort of retaliatory acquisition response because they so publicly fought this. I would not be surprised if there's some kind of I don't think they're going to go for a mega publisher. I don't know that they would go for an EA.
They've not got the money.
Well, they don't have the money for that, but I wonder if there's some sort of like, right, well, if they've done that, then because they clearly felt very threatened by this, and they clearly still do. And it wasn't public blustering. Like, they really did feel extremely threatened by this move. So it stands to reason that there's a plan B.
Who do you reckon they'll get?
I don't know. It could be Square Enix. Sega have recently said they're not open to acquisitions. It could be Ubisoft. But then again, you're setting yourself up with the same problem. Do you want to buy, especially in Ubisoft's situation, who are not in great shape at the moment, do you want to buy a headache? Just for the sake of owning a headache?
And also, like, if you buy a headache, or if you buy one of these companies, it obviously won't probably have the same scrutiny as Microsoft, but I imagine having had this whole situation go through, there would be a lot more discussion with them whether they will do what Microsoft have promised to do and said, will you keep these games on Xbox consoles for 10 years? And if you say no, then I'm afraid, like, we can't just let you do this as like a retaliatory thing. I think if anything, Sony need to be the bigger person. And if they do acquire another studio, as you know, in a retaliatory sense, and they do, they won't buy Ubisoft. But if they do buy Ubisoft, or if they buy Annapurna, or they buy, you know, one of the smaller studios, if they buy the Embracer Group,
God, then, can you imagine?
Jesus,
they'd just sell it off for scrap.
Yeah, they would. If they do that, I feel like they would have to be faced with the same scrutiny that Activision has by all of these bodies. And I do feel like that they would have to show some form of like, well, we're not going to put a limit on it. Mm. We're actually going to say that these games can always go on Xbox consoles as long as, you know,
you
have a console.
They did say that with Bungie.
Yeah, they did.
They did say, you know, we're not getting any exclusives out of this.
But, you know, I think they'd have to make a point. They'd have to be really petty about it.
They really would. Yeah, I can see this happening.
I can see it happening.
Because
as well.
why would you yell and scream like that and then just and then just sit down quietly?
Yeah.
They've got to have something in the works. And I'm trying to think if there are actually really many big, because I don't personally think they'll buy a publisher, but they could buy another big developer. Just as a well, if you're allowed to do that, then we're allowed to do this. And those games are exclusive.
Yeah.
So because you went through the courts and you said that we could have it for 10 years
and
we didn't, so we're going to keep it all to ourselves.
I always wonder what kind of developer though?
Well,
like,
I was just thinking, who are the big developers that are not
owned by
anymore?
Someone?
Remedy.
Yeah, Remedy.
Remedy is one that I can think
is
of.
Is Rockstar owned by anyone?
2K, yeah, they're Take-Two, I think.
Right. Yeah.
I confuse Take-Two and 2K all the time. I think they're Take-Two.
Was it Gearbox are owned by Embracer Group?
Gearbox are owned, like Obsidian, owned by Bethesda, but owned by Microsoft.
Yeah.
You've got flipping what they called. Oops. I'm trying to think of the Mass Effect developers. My brain is gone.
I don't know.
Dragon Age. What, come on.
You know who we're talking about.
Oh, God. Why can't I think of it? Who are they? They're owned by EA now, is my point. But they would be
who are they?
They just don't exist. Oh, BioWare. Jesus Christ.
BioWare.
My
Very
brain.
Good.
No, What's I also, that's one of my favorite game series. I can't even think of the name.
It also left my brain.
Yeah, BioWare
Valve,
is exactly,
they're not going to own Valve. But
no, they're absolutely not going to own Valve. It's like who's left? Who's left? So I suppose how we should leave this is not asking you who do you think they should buy.
Yeah.
Or who do you want them to buy?
Yeah.
But who do you think they might, if they go in with a retaliatory petty move and just go, well, we're going to buy something now.
Who do you think they'll get? Who
would be their target, do you reckon? I am so excited that this is nearly done.
Mm-hmm.
The FTC stuff.
Me too.
We'll talk about it again because it's a formality now, isn't it, really? They'll work it out with the CMA. It'll go through. They'll do like a little press conference live stream and they'll, no doubt Xbox has already got a roadmap of what they plan to do, especially in regards to Game Pass with Activision Blizzard titles. Mm-hmm. They'll have their little victory celebration. They'll have a stream. They'll show what they're going to do. And then we can all just breathe.
Yeah.
And we can move on until PlayStation
in 10 years
buys
time,
Remedy or something.
Yeah. In 10 years' time, we'll all say, wow, what a waste of time that was.
Do you remember
was.
When we spent a year following that circus?
Yeah. Do you remember when Activision Blizzard was a thing? Now we all just have games built into our brains.
Yeah, I'm going to be dead in 10 years, so I don't even care. I'm going to get my mileage out of Call of Duty for 9 years and then I'm gone.
Yeah, that's it.
Fantastic. Well, I think we've talked about that in quite enough detail. Yes. Thank you so much for listening/watching, everybody. We really appreciate you. Ashton's going to tell us a few places on the internet where you can find us.
I am. YouTube.com and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump for our video and live stream content. When we are live streaming on those, we're modded by Trailing Badger, Mr. Black, and Lord Brotovich. If you'd like a free Twitch sub, you can get one with Amazon Prime for no extra cost. And if you give it to us, we get a little bit of money. And Jeff doesn't get any more. If you would like to keep up to date with our video and live stream announcements and video content, we're going to do Triple Jump. No. Twitter.com and facebook.com/TeamTripleJump to catch up on any ticks and talks, tiktok.com/@TeamTripleJump and on patreon.com/TeamTripleJump for all kinds of different things, different early worst games ever, more content potentially coming in the future, and After Dark every other week. If you want to go on our website, triplej.mup, that's JJU.MP, spells jump, it's very clever. And if you want to join Discord, triplej.mup/Discord, chat with our wonderful community. They also have this tab where, you know, like Wordle and stuff.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of like game ones.
Ooh.
And film ones. And I'm a bit obsessed with it. Every day I go in and I check what everyone's got. And I don't post my things because I barely ever get it very well. So I don't post mine because I don't want to be embarrassed.
Right.
But people on there are really good at that. So if you like Wordle, there's game ones on there.
Yeah,
if you want to listen to podcasts in its audio form, want to go to triplej.mup/podcast. And to catch up on any of our live stream vods, triplej.mup/vods. To book any us two, Peter Austin or James Jenkins, on Cameo, triplej.mup/Cameo. And if you want to buy some sick and cool merch like those, like this, you can go to triplejumpshop.com and make sure you're following @triplejumpshop for the latest merch announcements.
Coming soon. Mm-hmm. Why not follow Peter and Ashton on Instagram and Twitter @ThatPeterAustin and @ScrambledAshton and myself just on Twitter @Confused_Dude. We do lists every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, Thursday being the joint stream.
Blaze it.
On Twitch. They're all on Twitch. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everyone else. Weirdest Games is monthly, a week early for patrons. The After Dark podcast is exclusive for patrons, fortnightly on a Monday. We do the podcast every Saturday. We do shows all the flipping time. Come check them out. Why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms and we'd really, really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Few things to talk about before we go. Firstly, I would like to say that when you see this podcast next week, it may be unrecognizable. We've got some stuff happening. It's really exciting. If you've listened to the end of this podcast, and I know a lot of people will probably click off by the time that we start running down, so, you know, that's fine. But this is an exclusive for you. Next week, There's some stuff going on across all of our platforms, and yeah. you may want to keep an eye out for it. It's very
keep
exciting.
A little looky.
Yeah, very exciting.
Also this week is the Weirdest Games Ever Week. It's WWE Crush Hour, or as I would like to call it, WWE Goblin Hour. Goblin and you'll Hour. Find out why if you watch the video that's coming out tomorrow at time of release.
Yeah.
Also, already out on the channel, big old video.
Yes. The 300 worst games of 1990 to 2020. This is a compilation video of all of our 10 worst games of X year lists between 1990 and 2020. It's 7 hours long.
Oh, people, my God.
Yeah, that's all of them. Wow. People flipping love those videos. They're by far our most our best watched list videos consistently, at least in terms of being in a series. So we thought, let's put it in one easy to consume video. So stick that on with some background noise, turn off ad block, and help us out. We'd really appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks so much.
Great falling asleep content.
Yes.
And if people are in the comments going, oh man, I thought this was a brand new 7 hour video, kindly remind them that the 7 hour videos don't exist without compilation formats, because that's crazy. Who would write a 7 hour video?
Not us.
Who would do that?
Maybe us.
We've
one
got
day.
To sleep.
Who knows?
Yeah,
who knows?
I may have spoken too soon. Yeah. We've done list ranked videos
ranked every
2 hours.
Activision Blizzard game.
Yeah.
Of all time ever.
We've ranked every worst game, but 10 for each year for the last 30 years. So that's 7 hours long.
Mm.
We have written that, but it is a compilation video. Anyway, go watch
anyway,
it.
Anyway, just watch it.
Please go and watch it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much again for watching. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. It's just enough time to hear from this week's sponsor again, which of course is to celebrate the release of Exo Primal. The beloved BBC documentary is making a comeback, presented by Kenneth Branagh-Kiosaurus, and returning to screens on Saturday night at 5:30 p.m. It is Walking with a Dinosaur. Thank you. All right, everybody, look after yourselves. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.